we're so used to seeing things that, in my opinion, aren't quite right in our treatment of animals.
Yeah, the less we eat, the less violence is being done, and the less destruction to the environment.
Everyone eats, and everyone has to make a moral decision every time that we sit down to the table.
Welcome to the Animal Voices Radio Show, Western Canada's only radio program on animal advocacy and compassionate living. This is 100.5 FM Co-op Radio CFRO in Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. Today is Friday, January the 15th, 2016. I am your host, Allison Cole, and I am joined here today by our guest co-host, Caroline Carnery.
Hi, Allison.
Hi, and Michael Persimmon.
Hey, Allison.
Welcome, everyone. So for our first segment today, we're going to be playing a video that actually just came out this week. It's by Bite Size Vegan, the YouTube channel. A woman named Emily produced this, and it's called 36 Hours Without Water. And it's a short 6-minute video which chronicles the life cycle of a pig from birth to slaughter. Emily sent it to me this week, and I was just so very moved, very touched. It's a heart-wrenching video, and I really, really want this video to get out and for everyone to watch it. It's radio-friendly, so we're going to play it, and then we'll be giving our thoughts about the video afterwards, so more on that soon. And for our second main segment today, we have Caroline here to speak with us about her plans to veganize the world, right, Caroline?
That's right, one person at a time.
Exactly. So we're going to... Caroline's been on the show a couple times now, and what I'd like to do is when new people come on the show is to hear their vegan story. So she'll be sharing some interesting stories that she has, actually. And we are just chatting last week at a dinner about this, and I said, Caroline, we should do this on the air. So we are going to do that. And Caroline's goal in life is to basically try to get everyone in her life to go vegan. And she's got methods of activism, which I think our listeners will find very useful just to see, you know, how other people are doing it and how she's fine-tuned them. But firstly, last week, Caroline, as I mentioned, we were out to dinner chatting, and I had recommended, you're fairly new in town, I had recommended a local vegan restaurant to you just sort of in passing, Dharma Kitchen, mm-hmm. which is one of my favorites kind of in my neighborhood. It's an it's a Buddhist vegan restaurant, just has a really nice vibe, and I mentioned like the food's really good, and you actually went and checked it out. So how was that for you?
I did go and check it out with my partner, Mark, and we had, from the moment we walked in the door, we had a wonderful experience. We were greeted by an individual who just had this wonderful calm energy and who took us to our seat and asked us if we were new to the restaurant and gave us an overview of the menu. And, you know, I just want to talk about the menu for just a moment, because
Absolutely.
We had this chai tea that they said took 3 days to make. And let me tell you, it was absolutely delicious. And we had this spicy tamarind soup that we shared with bean sprouts and celery and a surprise of pineapple and tomato and tofu. And then we had as our main courses some green curry with rice. And also I had a Dharma burger, which is a tempeh burger with tahini and fresh new potatoes. And the entire experience was absolutely delicious. And I thank you so much for that recommendation, Allison.
But did you have the tapioca pudding? Because that's the best part.
I didn't.
And
we were so full,
right?
When it was over. And we both said afterwards, okay, we're coming back here next week and we're going to bring people with us.
Excellent. I really like to hear that, actually, because I think it's really great to support our local vegan restaurants. Mm-hmm. And I know you said you haven't been in town for very long, but do you have any other like restaurants, vegan restaurants, and you too, Michael, that you enjoy, that you just want to put a shout out to?
Well, last week we went and had this Ethiopian meal as part of the
They're not vegan.
They aren't.
At all.
I had no idea.
Okay.
So they did that vegan thing for us. Okay,
yes,
well, that just shows
that
what
awesome.
I know.
That was really good.
It was absolutely delicious, and they should just do that all the time. And forget their non-vegan fare.
Absolutely. I was thinking just sort of for this segment myself is like, who do I like? And I know you asked me last week, Caroline, what's your favorite vegetarian restaurant in town or vegan? I think you said vegan because we don't have a lot of fully vegan restaurants. We should have more. I wish we did. And for me, I would like to put a shout out to Eternal Abundance. Mm-hmm. They're on Commercial Drive. They're very largely raw. They have some cooked food as well. What I like about them is they have all their food is very healthy and nourishing, just as Dharma Kitchen. It just makes you feel good to go into a place like that where you know that anything that you're going to get is just going to feed your body and feed your soul.
Absolutely.
They also have a fully organic grocery store that is part of the space, which should be noted. I never really shop there. They have a book section as well of all vegan books. They're just a very, like, I like supporting these places that are just like you go in there and you feel like you're at home. And not only that is they have couches there. You really do feel like you're at home. It has a really nice atmosphere. We have Animal Voices meetings there sometimes. It's because they've got the free Wi-Fi, right? So,
oh, let's go.
Absolutely. Yeah. And let's it's not too far from the station here. So that's one reason why we meet there sometimes after the show. And I go there sometimes on Fridays after the show just to kind of like it's in a good area. Like it's actually right next to Choices. And then there's us.
I was in this store. Actually, I was in this store buying all my vegan vitamins. Just a couple. I didn't even realize. No.
Oh.
This store that you're talking
Eternal
about.
Eternal Abundance?
Yes. Do they have a...
I don't think they have vegan
vitamins. Oh, they don't have a store associated with them? Are
well,
you
they have. They
sure?
have a They have a produce store.
Right.
And a restaurant space. It's one space. I've never seen any... Have you seen any vitamins there before,
No,
Michael?
I'm absolutely certain that this is the store I was in. And
Eternal
then we
Abundance.
Walked into the... And then I heard Mark say, Caroline, come over here. And I came over and there was a buffet. Is it buffet style?
No, but that's,
I
think you're talking about Sweet Cherubim. It's across the street. That's what I was gonna put a shout out to them as well, is because it's all in a really good space. There's Choices, Eternal Abundance, across the street. There's Sweet Cherubim, which is an all vegetarian grocery store. They do have vitamins. I bet you that's what you're talking about.
And so I was on
they've
the
got
hunt
samosas,
for vegan vitamins.
And next door, they've got the hugest array of probably vegan pastries that you've ever seen.
Oh, that was the place.
And a lot of Indian food. What about you, Michael? If you just if you were to put a give a shout out to your favorite vegan vegetarian restaurant, what would that be, or one that you would just like to mention?
Well, have you heard of Chow Veggie Express?
Yes, because we were talking about it recently. Remember? You were telling me about how awesome it is and that we should go there or I should go there.
Chow Veggie Express. It's absolutely my number one favorite restaurant.
And what? And I was saying, like, why does everyone like it? And you said the spices? Is that right?
Oh, my gosh. What they can do with spices, no one else can do with spices.
I'm curious to know what that means.
they're masters at spices. I don't know. Like, I'm having their soup and I'm thinking, what is this flavor? I've never had this before. And every spoonful, I'm thinking, my gosh, this is wonderful. And my thing is, like, you should just bring someone that you want to impress to this place. And if you're single, bring a date, because they'll associate all the good feelings of the food with you. And that can't be wrong. So, but they also have these wonderful names with their meals, like Golden Temple Prayers, A Family on the Back of a Moped. You know, it's just so thoughtful, so artful. They have a big community table.
Yeah.
I think they even have like a vegan bakery like adjacent to it. It's just a wonderful, wonderful place.
They make their own vegan ice cream. I know that, right? I've had that before there. Yeah, I've only been there maybe once or twice before, and it was a long time ago. And people are talking about it all the time on the sort of Vancouver vegan community scene. And that's why I questioned you about it, Michael, when we had that conversation a while ago. It's like, what's so good about it? And they're Vietnamese, right? Vietnamese based.
I believe so.
Fusion, maybe.
Something Thai, Vietnamese, something like that. I'm horrible at that little detail, but...
Oh, so I wanted to talk about too is, okay, so we have a question that sometimes comes up with, you know, if you're an ethical vegan is, do you believe in supporting just the totally vegan restaurants in your city or your town, or do you think that it's a good idea to branch out and to eat at omnivorous restaurants that serve meat but have vegan options? What do you think?
Allison, you know, it's so interesting that you raise this, because as we were sitting the other day at the Dharma Kitchen, we were having just this conversation, and I was saying to Mark, you know, this, I feel so good being in this space. It's just so calm. And I know that when I look at people eating at the other tables, they're here to have this peaceful, nonviolent experience. And I know that I'm not going to be looking at somebody carving up a steak. And, you know, I used the restroom and I came back and I said, I peered into the kitchen and it was so nice to see all these fruits and vegetables and, you know, and not a dead animal to be seen. And I said, we really need to patronize vegan restaurants and really try to give them our,
to keep them
our
alive
business.
Too.
Absolutely. And Mark gave me his counterpoint and he said, well, yes, that's true, but we really need to go to all the restaurants that we have been going to and call them in advance and give them little cards to letting them know what vegan, the definition of vegan is and what would qualify as vegan food so that we're educating along the way and encouraging businesses to put a V by their vegan dishes. And really doing advocacy with these other restaurants. And so we were having this back and forth conversation about, you know, on one hand, I was thinking of my own comfort. And on the other hand, Mark was really talking about, yes, but we, all that aside, we really need to be the activists that we are and bring this message out into the world. So we're just not sitting in our vegan silos.
I think the bottom line, the moral of this story is we just need to get out and eat as much food as possible because you need to support the vegan places. They need our support. They deserve it. They're good. Mm-hmm. But we also need to go and eat. Literally, I'm imagining like a Pac-Man chomping our way through the city of just a little visual there for people who can't see Pac-Man of chomping our way through all the restaurants in the city and like making that our goal to, and as you said, carry little cards in your purse or wallet that I have some at home that say, you know, these, dear manager of the restaurant, these are some, it'd be great to have some vegan options in your restaurant. And it's got a couple lines like, here are some ideas. Because as vegans, we can easily see like, oh, but this totally could have been veganized. This dish, you know, you didn't have to make it with chicken broth. It would have been vegan without it.
Absolutely.
Or, you know, why did you put honey in this? You could have just used agave.
Right.
Or
And I think giving feedback once they have made. I
can
remember,
want feedback.
They
I think.
Do. And I can remember the only time I've ever written a letter to IKEA was
about the meat. Did you ask them to have meatballs?
I always asked them to. I didn't ask them to have meatballs. I said, please have some vegan options on your menu. And this was a campaign for years. And when they got those meatballs, even though the vegan meatballs, even though they have enough salt in them to kill a horse, they really are. You know, there was the first vegan attempt that they ever made. And I sat down and I wrote them a letter saying, thank you so much for doing this. And this is why this is important. So
not only did you make the first letter, but you sent a thank you, which I think is really important. And who knows, maybe the vegan meatballs were all because of you, Caroline. I like to think that Panago, I like to think that Panago Pizza finally started offering Daya cheese because of me, because I asked them to like 10 years ago and they didn't.
Yay.
But I'm hoping that because, you know, eventually they saw the demand. So we have a new person in our studio today. His name is Michael Persimmon, and it's a lovely name, by the way, Michael. And
thank you.
And yeah, I'd like to just introduce Michael, and if perhaps you could, you're a vegan yourself, if you could perhaps share your story of how you came into this lifestyle. What did it for you?
Well, I was on my deathbed at the age of 38, the ripe old age of 38.
Wow, did not know that.
Yes. And that kind of snaps your attention really fast. You really start paying attention. It's like, how did I get here? What's going to happen to me? And you really start thinking about, okay, I need to turn this around. How am I going to turn this around? And for one reason or another, I didn't want to go to see a doctor. I've already done that. They already pulled out too much of my body. I said, no, I'm going to do something different this time. And I just felt my life slipping away. I felt like this old man. And what I did is I was kind of desperate. I just wrote down a piece of paper, God, show me how to have energy. And I just really clear, and I put it up on the wall. And I would just look at it every day. And then like a doubt would come up, like, is this ever going to happen? Am I ever going to get back? And I remember one time I was at Choices, just kind of walking around, and this is when they had a book section. And I remember looking down and I just picked up this book and I just opened up to this page and I just read the sentence and it said, if you adopt a vegan diet, you'll have energy.
There was your answer.
And I just stopped and then I, you know, and then knowing me, it's like I turned to the back and said, okay, how much is this going to cost? Oh, $21. You know, am I going to buy a book for $21? And I thought, oh, wait, come on. This is exactly what I've been looking for. So I turn it over. It says, you know, The Thrive Diet by Brendan Braser, this vegan triathlete. And I brought it home. And what I really liked about this book is he had a really clear story, a really concise message. And he was able to break it down. And he made these promises. And I really liked that he was a winning vegan triathlete. And I pretty much went vegan like almost overnight reading that. I said, okay, I'm done here. And I just started doing these recipes. And I remember thinking, oh, this is so good. This is so good. And I'm getting energy. But it wasn't until I actually saw Earthlings. Earthlings, that's really cemented it to me because...
For people Earthlings. Not in the know, that is basically the what's called the vegan maker out of films out there. You can watch it for free on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And because I felt like, well, you know, I could always, you know, if I'm going out with friends, like I could always like switch back, and it wasn't so much a priority. Like, oh, I'm feeling better now. I can kind of like, you know, do something that's not so healthy. But when it was about the animals, that really changed everything. I just felt like the truth was just so strong. And to me, truth is very important in my life. Being an ex-monk, like I just want to know everything. I want to be so clear on things, and that did it for me. So it was
once
the animals.
Once you know that, you can't unknow it, right?
Yes.
I mean, you wouldn't want to, but you're compelled then to act.
Yes. Well, yes, and this is my situation with my friends on Facebook, my poor friends on Facebook who get kind of my activism about this. And you're laughing because you're probably the same way, right?
Oh, I am the same
way. This is what we're going to talk about later.
Yes, exactly.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah. It's not even so much a decision that you're making. It is that you're compelled internally to bring this forth and to act. And it's not necessarily bravery or courage or anything else. It's you must do it. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah. Thank you for sharing that, Michael. I didn't even know what your story was going to be. And it, you know, I think everyone's,
that's great.
I love hearing people's stories about how they transitioned. There are a million and one different reasons and different ways of how people mm-hmm. came into this. And I think hearing every little story, every anecdote, it helps. I feel like it helps me just grow as a person and just to learn how to understand people better. And I hope it'll help our listeners too, and just understanding that perhaps some of these stories might resonate with them and that it might be the same way for them. So thanks so much for sharing that with us.
Oh, you're welcome.
Hey there, Co-op Radio listeners. Do you like food? Of course you do. Would you like to learn more about food? Why not? Well, then tune in every Monday at 8 p.m. for Food Line Radio, where we talk all about food. Sourcing food, buying food, the politics of food. Hey, even cooking food. Food, glorious food. Listen every Monday at 8 p.m. for Food Line Radio on Vancouver's Co-op Radio 100.5 FM.
Tune in Thursday nights for Fruit Salad from 7 to 8 p.m.
Tune in to Fruit Salad.
Tune in Thursday nights for Fruit Salad.
Who are those queer, trans, lesbi, gay people anyways? What is their agenda? Tune in to find out while they celebrate musicians, performers, organizations, families, writers, Pink World News, and much, much more. Fresh fruit, every show.
Tune in Thursday nights for a show that's out of this world. Fruit Salad, 7 to 8 p.m.
You are listening to Animal Voices Vancouver here on Co-op Radio. And now we wanted to transition into our first main segment here, where I'm going to be playing a video that, like I mentioned before, is very radio friendly. It's a 6-minute video by Bite Size Vegan, which is a YouTube channel run by Emily Moran Barwick. And she has created, I guess she creates these short videos. I hadn't really heard of her before, and I'm really, really happy that she sent this to me this week. I think it's such an important video to share with people. It's a 6-minute video that is a hand-drawn time-lapse that narrates one pig's heartbreaking experience. It opens with the words, "Today I am born," and it goes through the life cycle of this pig who, like most pigs on this earth, are raised to be eaten as meat. Now, animal rights activist and artist Emily Moran Barwick, like I mentioned, she's the creator of Bite Size Vegan. This is her third installment in her Draw My Life video series, which she calls it, in which she utilizes the popular social media tag to tell the stories of animals trapped in the food industry from their perspective. So I'm just going to leave it at that for now, and then we'll talk about this later. So here is this video that she calls 36 Hours Without Water.
Today I am born. In 3 days, parts of me will be cut off. In 6 months, I'll be dead. On my way to meet my killers, I'll travel with my family for 36 hours without water. Some of us will die in the heat before we arrive, die too early to be killed. Have you ever been thirsty? I'm hungry. I'm trying to get to my mother for milk. We all are. My brothers and sisters all trying to eat. There isn't much room. The bars get in the way. Mama can't move, but she sings to us while we eat. That's my favorite, when she sings. At night, my brothers and sisters try to get as close to her as we can, but we can't reach her. We huddle together. The red light keeps us warm, but it's not Mama. Day 3, and it happens. They come. They grab my brother first, and I hear him scream. 4 times he screams, loud and sharp. I'm afraid. I try to hide, we all do, but there's nowhere to go. Then the cutter grabs me, and it happens. A loud noise, and my ear is on fire. I scream. Something cold in my mouth, and I hear a crunch. My teeth are shorter. I scream around the cold thing. Then I'm upside down, and I feel my tail break. I scream. Then the worst pain I've ever felt. Something between my legs is ripped from me. I scream until my voice breaks. 2 weeks later and Mama's gone. Our food is hard and dry. No more milk. No more singing. No more Mama. I'm 6 months old. I feel older. I'm tired and hot. My body aches and I'm dirty. We all are. The cutters come, and it's time. Suddenly, light. And they're pushing us towards it, pushing and kicking, screaming and hitting. We're moving as fast as we can. And then we stop, because there's nowhere to go. We're tighter together than ever before, and it's so hot. Soon we're panting, all of us panting. We can't get away from each other. It's so hot. And then we're moving, finally some air. But it's not enough. I try to get closer to the air, but there are too many of us, all of us trying. I think of my mama again, all of us trying to get to her milk. But there's no singing here, only panting and groans and cries. And it gets hotter. It's nighttime. The sun is gone and we can breathe more slowly. I'm thirsty. We all are. We're looking for water or food, but there's nothing. I've made it to the edge and try to smell for any hint of water, just a drop, something. We're dying. It's light again. I'm so tired, too hot to sleep, and it's getting hotter. All I hear is breathing. But some of my brothers and sisters aren't breathing, not anymore. We start moving again, and I feel we've been in here for days. Skin upon skin, we're so hot it burns when we touch. We're all trying to get away from each other, but there's nowhere to go. We're stopping again. Stopping and starting. When we're still, it's the worst. The heat. I can barely breathe. All I think of is water. I can smell it, taste it, see it, feel it, like it's right there pouring through the tiny openings that only deliver stale air. But this time it feels so real. I can almost believe it. Then I hear them. Cutters outside, cutters looking in, cutters with water. Finally, water. Is it real? They're pouring in water and we're trying to reach them, most of us. Some aren't moving at all. I open my mouth and it's cold and it's real. It's the most incredible thing I've ever tasted. And these cutters aren't screaming or kicking or hitting. They're almost singing like Mama, low and soft and kind. One reaches in and pets my head, the only time I've been touched and not hurt. And then we're moving, but not for long. We stop, and then bright light and air, finally air. The loud cutters are back with their kicking and hitting, and something new, something that shocks, sharp pain, and I wonder what's next. I'm caught. I can't move. Even more than before, there's nowhere to go. Just a few of us in here, but no room. And then the burning. Something's wrong. Something's always been wrong. We're moving and it burns. Everything burns. My eyes, my mouth, inside. I'm burning inside. I'm thrashing and trying to escape. We all are. And now I'm upside down. We're all upside down. But I'm still moving. Why am I moving? And then I see them. More cutters. I'm moving and can't stop. Then it comes. The last cut I feel. Sharp and deep and hot. And I'm bleeding. Everywhere I'm bleeding. And then water. I hear water. Finally water. And then it happens. I'm dropped into the water and it's fire. It's boiling and red with blood. I'm on fire. I can't breathe. I think of the cold water and the cutters who sang like Mama. And I take my last drink.
And that's the video called 36 Hours Without Water. If you're interested in seeing it, you can find it on our website, animalvoices.org, and it's also being posted in about 3 minutes on our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver. So, what did you think?
Oh, well, I'm over here having a big visceral reaction to that entire story from beginning to end. That brings back a lot of memories for me, being from farm country and having seen that process from one end to the other and knowing what it's like to hear those pigs squealing and to see a sow in a very, very small farrowing crate not being able to touch or interact with her babies, and just the whole unnatural process that's being inflicted upon these animals from the time they're born until the time that they are slaughtered in the most inhumane way. So I feel ill, and I really like the fact that the story is told, you know, from the perspective of the little pig, and that the pig referred to humans as cutters.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
What really gets to me is that it's the personification of the animal, of the pig. And it's a fact that people, what resonates with people is when they are hearing the story of one individual.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why, that's one reason why I feel that this kind of activism, media activism, is so important. Not only because it personifies the one pig, but because you can share it on your social media, and we all know what the power of social media is, right? Because everyone can see this video and hear it too. Like, we just played it here on the show. It's available for free. One person has decided to, you know, make it her activism to create these videos, and now it's out there. And another thing I like about it too is, whereas it's graphic because there are images in it, it's different than showing a video where you're actually mm-hmm. seeing real live footage of pigs being hung upside down and having their throat slit and being put into the hot bath to right. burn off their hair. It's I found watching the video to be mesmerizing, actually. Captivating.
And her voice is so soothing because she's mm-hmm. telling the, you know, the story in this little pig's voice, which is so disarming and somehow mm-hmm. comforting.
That's how I felt too. It was calming, and you can't help but to relate to this individual.
It's interesting mm-hmm. how, you know, how human beings don't have empathy quite often to a group of people or to a group of animals. But when you take the individual, as you mentioned, Allison, and bring it forward, I don't know if it's our mirror neurons or what's really at work there, but somehow we can feel that in a way that we don't otherwise feel when we're talking about pigs en masse.
For the most part, human beings are born with empathy. Most mm-hmm. of us, large majority of humans, have empathy. And I think the only way that we are going to make the world a better place for animals by not raising them and torturing them and killing them for food is to have that empathy brought out in us.
Absolutely.
Or just even returned. I mean, if it just reawaken it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because we're all born with empathy and we lose it as, I mean, it becomes hardened more and more. Like, I think you might have some stories to share about that later mm-hmm. on in the show, Caroline, just in the environment that you were brought up in. But just in environments in general where we grow up with our parents telling us to eat meat and maybe not wanting to explain what it really is, and growing up with media messages, just glamorizing meat. Growing up with men thinking that they need to eat meat to basically fulfill their manly identities, or for women too, for that matter, that they need to eat meat for whatever reasons. Well, right.
We're taught that it's natural, necessary,
and normal, natural, and necessary. Right. To take the words of Dr. Melanie
exactly.
Joy. Yeah, and that's actually called carnism, and there's mm-hmm. a book about that by Dr. Right. Melanie Joy, which people should read because it's actually a whole psychological process that we go through that we don't realize.
Yeah, and she has a TED Talk as well. I think it's mm-hmm. about 17 minutes long. You've probably talked about it on the show before, but I highly recommend it on just those topics.
Yeah, so just going back to the video, I just really feel like it's important, like, to get these out there. Share them on your social media. Please go to our Facebook page or our website where I've prominently posted them. Get them out there. And I feel like, we'll talk about this on the show later too, but I feel like it's videos like these and it's images and media and social media like this video that is going to really touch people's hearts and as we mentioned, open up their empathy. Not only, this is fact, what we heard and saw in this video, what is being shown is a fact. When people say they like their bacon, this is where it's coming from, and you deserve to know it, and you deserve to be accountable for it as well. Right? You need to know where your food is coming from in order to be an accountable human being on this earth, right? And don't we all want to have that kind of accountability and integrity in the way that we live our lives? So therefore, you need to know what's going on, right? And this is just pigs too. It happens to all animals. So keep that in mind as well. Anyways, that was the video called 36 Hours Without Water. And once again, you can find it on the YouTube channel as well, Bite Size Vegan. And it was created by Emily Moran Barwick. So thank you, Emily, for that very much.
You are listening to Animal Voices on Vancouver's Co-op Radio, 100.5 FM CFRO. 100% listener-sponsored radio broadcasting live from the east side on unceded Coast Salish territories.
And now we have some news. Caroline.
Well, we've just learned that Hong Kong will ban the import and export of ivory. The city's leader announced on Wednesday in a historic move hailed by animal welfare activists. And Chief Executive Liang Chang-ying told lawmakers in his annual policy address that officials were determined to crack down on the trade in Hong Kong. Elephant tusks are used in traditional medicine to make ornaments with a high demand in Asia and the Middle East. China accounts for 70% of the world demand for ivory, according to the wildlife NGO. They say China's zeal for ivory is responsible for the death of 30,000 African elephants each year. There are now an estimated 470,000 African elephants living in the wild, compared to 550 in 2006, says Elephants with No Borders. And the international trade in elephant ivory, with rare exceptions, has been outlawed since 1989, after populations of the African giants dropped from millions in the mid-20th century to some 600,000 by the end of the 1980s. So there is no timeline set for this to actually go into effect, but we'll certainly be following this story, and I'm sure there will be nonstop petitions to help this move along.
You know, I saw something really interesting on my Facebook a couple of weeks ago, and maybe both of you saw this as well, and I thought, this is brilliant. Why haven't they been doing this for years until our populations of elephants are nearly decimated? And what they're doing now, and rhinoceros horns, it's an issue as well, is apparently some people who care, activists in Africa, are going and dyeing the horns mm-hmm. like pink or purple. Did you see that, Michael?
I can imagine. I did, and I even shared that on Facebook, but then a friend said, you know, I shared that as well, but someone pointed out that that's not true. And so,
come on, it's got to be true.
I know, but,
no.
it's
brilliant.
It is absolutely brilliant, and that was my reaction as well. And she's also a very sensitive person, and she thought, well... But someone pointed out, no, that was Snopes. It's not true. And so,
whenever you think it's too good to be true... It's not. Yeah. You go to Snopes.
So somebody photoshopped that.
It's an idea whose
wrong.
Time has come, obviously.
Absolutely.
And so now it's like, now I have doubt in my mind. Is it true or not? Because, of, you know, you see his picture, it looks like it could be true.
Let's make it true.
Mm-hmm.
Because
yes.
When I saw that, I'm like, there's no way that can't be true, because that should be so easy to do. I don't know how easy it is to catch a rhinoceros or elephant. Well, uh-huh. I mean, what I think is that if people are able to poach them, then they've got to be, I mean, there's got to be a way to access them to mm-hmm. dye their horn. And then all is saved, right? All is saved in the world. I just thought that was brilliant. Anyways, we have done a couple of interviews about really excellent interviews about ivory and elephant poaching in the past. One of them was with the David Sheldrick Wildlife Fund a couple of years ago. If you want to check those out, go to our website, animalvoices.org, and just type in elephants, and you'll see a couple of interviews there. You have another news story, Caroline.
I do, and this one is a local BC story, and it's the case of Mike Hopcraft, who has promoted himself widely as the reptile guy. Many of us know him, and he's made headlines with his facility in Mission, as it was raided by the BCSPCA, and a number of animals were seized. Now, he claims to rescue and rehabilitate animals and is often featured on morning's news shows as a reptile rescue expert. Yet court documents obtained by Animal Justice tell a very different story. The documents describe what was found in the BCSPCA raid. Investigators repeatedly found dead animals in such severe distress that they needed to be euthanized, infected and injured animals, emaciated and underweight animals, unsanitary tanks with overcrowding, cramped conditions, moldy feces in tanks with live animals with no water or undrinkable water, exposed wires, and broken lights.
So what I've heard about this person is he markets himself as a rescue, but when you're charging to bring animals to birthday parties, like, is that done with the integrity of a rescue and rehabilitation center? And not only that, but I don't know if you remember that show Fear Factor from a long time ago. I don't know if it's still on, but he runs his own Fear Factor game of sorts, where he's charging for this. I don't know. I can't say, but I've seen the pictures. Is he'll have like a big tank where someone of tarantulas and someone or and there was snakes too. I saw someone sticks their head in it and they do whatever the challenge was. That always really freaked me out when I used to watch that show. But it seems like really exploitative of the animals. Why would you do that if you're a rescue and your intentions are to help and respect? Yeah. You would hope respect these animals.
Well, this is certainly a big criticism against this individual, that he has very dubious fundraising, what he would call fundraising initiatives in order to help the animals. And
help them by exploiting them. It's the ethics. You gotta think about the ethics there.
And I think he's known to actually sell animals as well. So that's very out of line with the whole rescue ethos.
So one of our colleagues, David Isbister, has been very active in finding out all sorts of information about this case. He was actually, I saw him on the news a couple weeks ago speaking about it. So he just informed me that there's no known court date for Mike Hopcraft to go to court to face whatever is going to be happening to him. So I do have another story that was in the news just in this week, actually. And when you first saw the headlines, or when I first saw the headline on the NBC News .com page, which, you know, major news source, I was happy. The Ringling Brothers and Barnum and Bailey Circus is ending its elephant acts a year and a half early and will retire all of its touring elephants in May. So as we learned last year, that due to public pressure, people don't want elephants in circuses anymore. In fact, some towns and cities have ordinances against having them in their city. People don't want them. So they announced last year that they're going to be phasing them out of their lineup of animals. And now it's happening as early as this May. Great, right?
Seemingly.
So the truth, the truth, as we will report here on Animal Voices, is that instead of performing, the Ringling Elephants will now become part of an ongoing cancer research project, which has already identified a cancer-fighting gene unique to elephants. So going from one form of exploitation to another. And that's the sad thing.
I smell some money.
Well, isn't money always at the bottom of these disgusting pits?
I mean,
wouldn't
it just be nice if these elephants could go live out their life in a beautiful sanctuary? But no, not.
And that's
quite
what I thought when I first read
the
story.
We all did.
No, it's terrible. Yeah. So apparently, if people want some background information about why elephants and cancer, cancer is not found very much in elephants. I don't know if it is in other wild animals. But anyways, the source says cancer is much less common in elephants than in humans, even though the big animals' bodies have many more cells that you would think would have the ability to become cancerous. So that's a paradox known among scientists, and now researchers think that they may have an explanation, one they say might someday lead to new ways to protect people from cancer. So Ringling actually sees the possibility of restoring image and yes, rebuilding profits by using the former circus elephants to find a cure for cancer, because yay, we cured cancer. Ringling is actually not hated anymore, right? So that's really twisted in my mind, really twisted, and I won't really say anything more about that. I think our listeners can come to their own conclusions about that. And then finally, the circus will continue to feature other extraordinary animal performers, including tigers, lions, horses, dogs, and camels.
Yeah, just don't go.
Boycott them like we're boycotting SeaWorld and other aquariums like that, and it will phase them out. People don't want elephants. Say that you don't want these other animals as well. And one of these days, these circuses with animals will be a thing of the past. So moving on here, we have Caroline as our special guest on today's show, and we're going to have a little bit of a conversation about sort of your journey into your activism, and now this has led to you, what I've called you wanting to veganize the world, or at least your social circle of friends, which is a great start because you've already had successes, and I'd love to hear more about this. But first of all, you have a really interesting beginning to this journey. Tell us that you became vegan many, many years ago.
Almost 40 years ago.
I would call you a child prodigy. You're one of those child prodigies that, unlike me, see the light at a very young age. Like we were discussing earlier, like your sense of compassion was either never turned off or maybe temporarily starting to go off, but then you turned around really quickly and saw the light. So what happened?
I had a jolt.
Yeah, you had a jolt.
Had a jolt and a little PTSD that's last a lifetime. But I, you know, Allison, I was raised in farming country. I was raised in small town Ontario, where we had absolutely nothing but farms around us. Pig farms, dairy farms, farming was what we all did. In school, when the harvest came around, there were probably two or three kids left in our class for weeks on end, because that's what the kids were all pulled out in order to participate in the harvest. We were, I was right in the heart of farming country. So, and I belong to what is known as 4-H.
Right. Now, that fascinates me, because I want to hear all about it. I want to get into the depths of this. Tell us what it's all about.
So 4-H is like scouts for farm kids. And so what it is you know, and I printed the pledge last night, and, you know,
right.
I've come
the
full.
Four H's,
it's
right?
The four H's, and it's I pledge my head to clear thinking. How prophetic that was in the end. Mm-hmm. My heart to greater loyalty, my hands to larger service. We would all come together and say this. My heart to better living for my club, my community, my country, and the world. And so we did all kinds of things. We baked bread, and we learned about animal husbandry, and we had food cooking courses. And, you know, we ranged in ages, generally speaking, from 9 to 14 or 15 years old in the community that I was in. But I actually think that 4-H goes up to 20 or 21 years old. And you learn about farm life. And so I was involved in that club, and we had just been through this, we just finished this segment called Let's Bake Bread. And we had been baking bread, and we went to Kitchener-Waterloo to the Western, to the Weston Bakery, and we saw how they, made bread, and it was quite fascinating. And so the next segment came along, and that was Let's Make Meat. That was actually the name of it, Let's Make Meat. Wow. And I think I was around 12 years old.
No euphemisms there.
No, Let's Make Meat. Yeah. And and I said, well, we just went to the bakery. Now, this was my idea. Let's go to the abattoir. Let's go to the slaughterhouse. Let's go to the kill plant. And so this was a different age.
And so you did. You just moseyed on in there and took a tour.
We set up a tour, and they were very happy to give it to us. At also in Kitchener-Waterloo, and I think there were five or six of us that attended, all of the same in the same age range as I.
What age were you?
And I think I was around 12, okay. Maybe almost 13 at that time. And so off to the kill plant we went, and not really, you know, we had all been on the farm. We all knew animals. We all knew what happened on the farm. I could never have anticipated what the slaughterhouse would be like. And so we went in and we attended, and that day changed my life forever.
And what did you see there?
And we, you know, I'll give you, you know, one example. We saw all manner of animals killed, chickens, cows, and pigs in the thousands on the assembly lines. But I do remember the first stop that we had on that tour was we went in to see the pigs killed. And I have always had a tremendous affinity for pigs, and often spent large quantities of time with little pigs who were suckling at their mother's teats in the farrowing crates. And they're very small and warm and pink and cuddly at that time. So you can pick the, some people have dolls. I had little pigs to coddle. And they just are
creatures.
And so I loved the pigs. I loved the piggies, and I still do. And here was all the pigs were lined up, and all of a sudden a clamp was slammed around their leg, and they were hoisted up. I don't even think there was a captive bolt at that time. They were just hoisted up, squealing like you have never, the sound coming from these pigs, not only those that were about to be slaughtered, but all of those in line waiting their turn. The sound was just overwhelming, and we were on this catwalk not very far away from this, and then the animal would be jolted up, and the individual responsible would take a large knife like that of a machete and would slit the animal's throat, and then they would all go up on this assembly line and a trough was below them where all their, the blood was flowing, this red blood was flowing like a river, and it was splattering everywhere. And I could remember the blood, we had aprons on, and there was blood splattering on my feet and on the apron, even though it was, you know, maybe 15 or 20 feet away. And then these animals proceeded up, kicking for their lives, even though their life was forfeit, and moved directly into a steam bath. And I could see that they were still alive, and they were going into this scalding steam bath to have their bristles removed. And I kept saying, but they're alive. They're alive. Can't you see they're alive? Mm-hmm. And so I was going through this process of absolute terror in real time. And nobody else seemed to be having the same response. So
really?
Nobody else was having the same response. And I don't know why. Nobody else became a vegetarian. Nobody else was moved by this in the same way. But it changed my life. And so I was in shock. I went through that entire day in the slaughterhouse going to see the, you know, the cows killed and often cut open with saws while they were still looking around. Now, I've seen this with my own eyes, and the chickens going into the, you know, to be electrocuted with their heads underwater and then to have their, you know, feathers removed and their throat slit, not in that order, and just the absolute horror of the abattoir. And so I came home from the slaughterhouse that day, a different person, a traumatized person, that's for sure. And I announced at the dinner table that I wouldn't be eating meat and that I wasn't going to be eating animals anymore.
What was the reaction to that?
Well, that was, you know, that was not a popular view in farming country.
Or with any parents in general, pretty much. It's their worst nightmare if their kid doesn't want to eat meat.
And, I hadn't done, this was before, way before the internet. So I hadn't done any, you know, I didn't know any other vegetarians or vegans. I didn't know about nutrition. I just stopped eating. I stopped eating meat. Now, I did carry on, I should say, with the whole egg and dairy thing came a couple of years later. So that it took a while for me to, you know, I think it was about 15 or 16 years old when all of that permeated my brain and I was able to connect with those animals as well.
So moving on,
yeah.
Many years later, and we don't have a lot of time for this. We might have to continue this.
Sorry,
later,
I went so deeply into that.
No, and I love
such
that.
A visceral response that
I love
I was
that.
Right back there.
I mean, it changed your life as a young
child,
12 or 13 years old. You never looked back. Interesting that no one else reacted that way.
Nobody else reacted that way.
I don't know how to respond to that. Like I was going to ask you about that, and you said there were about six of you there.
Now, some were younger. My sister was there, and she has since become a vegetarian and now vegan.
As an adult?
As an adult.
So but that she planted a seed probably, you know, in her life.
Perhaps it did. And then there's my constant haranguing throughout the years, most definitely in my one-person education campaign. But if I was 12, she would have been 10. She was a little kid. So I don't know, you know, we were little kids. And so I don't know what she comprehended at that time, but we often muse about how she didn't have that effect and how the others didn't and how it made such a big, I connected, I felt empathy for those animals.
I would think that most children would, you know, but going back to 4-H is your, as far as I know, I mean, they have you raise animals and then they have you send them to slaughter.
Right. And it is just the most heartbreaking
to get you
to
face
see.
Reality of the business and to basically Absolutely. Break you down so they can build you up again as hardened farmers.
Yes. And it is terrible to see the kids. Now, all of my friends were grooming their favorite calf.
Yeah. And I've seen that myself at the P&E here.
And they go and they get the ribbon.
Yeah.
And then their calf is led away because it's going to slaughter. And the child, the teenager is left standing there saying, you know, this is a child who is groomed this animal and looked in this animal's eyes and has kissed their muzzles and have, you know, smelled this animal every day and taken care of it and developed a deep bond with it. And then all of a sudden it's ripped away from them and they're left standing in the ring, basically sobbing in a pool of tears. And I've seen that over and over and over again growing up. So
I want to talk about that a little bit more, but it just astounds me as to this whole program that's part of our society, and it works because they are desensitized, and they're, except for people like you. Have you ever known another 4-H child to break out of the system?
I have not, but I, you know, I did go on to, I left farming country. I went off to university to become a teacher and then subsequently a lawyer. So I was heavily in an urban, isolated environment. And I didn't actually meet another vegetarian and then vegan until I got to university. So I was in my 20s, actually, by the time I met anybody else who thought the same way I did. And I felt like I had, I think I did cry. I'm not alone.
Yeah. And you know what? I think that's a good place to conclude part one, because we definitely need to we need to finish this at one point. You're going traveling soon, so when you come back. So part one is Caroline telling her story of how her life was changed. Part two is going to be how Caroline is now changing the worlds of others and her quest to veganize the world. So stay tuned for that. Thank you so much for that, Caroline.
Oh, thank you for letting me tell my story.
Yeah, great story. There's more to tell. You have been listening to Animal Voices today on 100.5 CFRO Co-op Radio in Vancouver, Canada. Please join us on our next show, which is going to be next Friday, January the 22nd. We have two excellent interviews for you coming up. Animal rights lawyer Camille Labchuk will be on the show to speak on the recent update to her work to have the Ontario Human Rights Commission recognize veganism as a human right. Plus, we'll also have Dr. Carrie Cronin on the show. She is one of the founders of the Unbound Project, which is a multimedia and book project to recognize and celebrate women at the forefront of animal advocacy. We here at Animal Voices want to connect with you online. Animalvoices.org is where you can go and find our podcasts of our shows and subscribe to us via iTunes. You can learn about our upcoming events, stay in touch with us via our Facebook page, Animal Voices Vancouver, and join us on Twitter at Animal Voices YVR. We need help. We are all volunteer run here, and we need help producing shows, hosting shows. If you're available on Fridays and live in Vancouver and you know animal rights issues, a vegan lifestyle, and that's something that connects to your heart and something that you're passionate about or even just want to learn more about, please get in touch with me. Send me an email, Allison, at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. I'd be happy to speak with you about how you can get involved on the show. And please also do send your suggestions and comments about the show either on our Facebook page or via email. Once again, at radioanimalvoices@gmail.com. We're closing the show now with a song dedicated to the pigs. This is Pig Song by Dr. Will Tuttle. Stay tuned for Radio EcoShock with Alex Smith. Thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices today. And remember to be kind to the animals.